This is WCNO Palm City, the good news station.
The Lord our God says, take care of the widows and the orphans. The gentleman in my studio today, I'm honored to have all three of them here. Michael Keene is the CEO of Four Kids. Corey, I don't know what your official title is.
Church Engagement Coordinator.
Director of Engagement Coordinator.
Yes, sir.
I like that. Director of Engagement. There you go. And, of course, we have Pastor Trevor, who has two children already adopted. Mm-hmm. And he's the pastor of Morningstar Church here in Vero Beach, Florida, over on Oslo, with a Sunday morning service at 10 a.m.
Yep.
And other things that are going on there. You might want to check them out. And so Michael Keene has seven children. Three which are their own biologically, and four that are their own but adopted.
Correct.
Wow, that's just wonderful. And thanks for being here today. So, hey, maybe a life will be changed. If you know somebody that's considering adoption, if you know a younger couple might be interested, maybe I shouldn't say younger, because maybe, do you ever have older people that come and adopt?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I thought the law was you had to be your age minus maybe 20 years or something. In other words, like me as a 70-year-old, I could only get like a 50-year-old.
Not quite.
Nope,
not quite.
Getting old's not fun, guys. Especially when you're still 19 inside, you know. They call you sir and go, I don't think so, but they don't know it. Okay. But anyway, so it's good to have you guys here, and thank you very much, very much, what the three of you are doing, because it is our Father's heart to take care of the orphan.
Yeah.
And he even says that he is the father to the orphan. I lost my dad at a very early age, and I will confess, and part of my testimony is that he came in. He said he promises. He says, bring me to remembrance of my promises. Mm. So he's saying, oy vey, he's at it again. I say, you promised you're the father to the orphan. And so some things that happen in my life make no sense. But if you're out there and you're an orphan, the Lord will bless you. The Lord is not a man that he should lie. And these gentlemen are helping people adopt children. So great. It must be great to do something in life that's like altruistic.
Yeah, it's pretty special to be able to get paid to do what the Bible calls pure and undefiled before God.
Yeah.
It's an honor.
Now, were you doing something else before this, or how did you fall into this?
Yeah, so I have an interesting kind of work history. I've kind of been all over the place. I graduated from the University of Florida with an undergrad in religion. Knew from my high school days that really ministry was kind of the track I wanted to go on. So studied religion to have more of an intellectually well-rounded view of what the world views are. That way I can have certain dialogues with people and know how to navigate some of those conversations. From there, went to seminary, so I have a master's degree in biblical studies and languages.
Really?
From Southern Evangelical Seminary up in North Carolina. And during that time in seminary, I was a citrus farmer, and then I was we call them sanitation engineers, but it's just a fancy name for a garbage man. Worked in a public works department. And then from there, moved into
it sounds like you went through the school of humility.
For a long time, I was for 2 years, I was having direct conversations with the Lord and really saying, why, what am I doing here? Why do you? Yeah. And I remember, I've told Corey this. It's a part of my testimony. I remember the exact part of the road I was on in my garbage truck when I was having this conversation. He said, son, why don't you say that out loud? And I said, sure. God, why do you have me doing this? Why am I picking up garbage? Why do I stick my head in garbage cans to do this? And he didn't say anything. And I said, wow, that is some serious pride. And then he said,
Why is it prideful?
Because I was elevating myself to a position where
you were superior to being a garbage can.
Where I was superior. And he said, son, if I don't work some of these things out of you, mm-hmm. you're not only going to ruin yourself in ministry, mm-hmm. you're going to ruin other people too. So that was about 2 years into that, and I was like, great, we got it. Let's go. Let's get into ministry now. And he said, no, about 3 more years of this, and you'll be good. So, it was a number of years that I did, and the job was wonderful. Don't get me wrong. It just when you know the calling that God has put on your life, it may be in a future spot, but you have to go through that period of getting some stuff out of you before you can go into what he's called you to.
My friend became the CEO of Coldwell Banker. And Fred DeFalco lives down in South Florida, Boca Raton or whatever. He's a realtor. And he worked on the back of a garbage truck when mm-hmm. he was younger. So it seems to be part of the process. I wanted to ask you one thing. You know, the Bible says the Lord, you start doing work for the Lord, he says, those who do bear fruit will be pruned, that they will bear more fruit. Now, I don't know if these other two guys in the room know about this, but if you were a citrus farmer, you probably know about pruning.
Yeah.
And I remember I was not dating, but I had a platonic relationship with a lady up in Ocala maybe about 35 years ago, and she had groves. And she said, in this business, you always ask your neighbor to do the pruning. You probably understand why. Would you explain why?
It's very true, because you see what is produced outwardly, and when you cut back, there's a point that you can cut back to where it's not going to actually produce anything. So you can go through the process of cutting back without actually stimulating the tree enough to produce a more abundant crop. So when you cut back trees, when you cut back citrus trees, it's almost like you're cutting away years worth of growth on a tree in order to produce a crop that's going to be many fold.
In other words, it's severe, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. It's so severe that if you see a properly pruned tree, you'll think, they killed the tree, killed the tree. But then it bears fruit 100-fold, 200, 300-fold. Yeah. So anybody been through that process in this room?
Oh, yeah.
Very much so.
Yes, that's just amazing, the analogies and how God puts everything together, huh? Yeah. And Mike, Corey, how'd you get involved with four kids?
Yeah, so in 2020, my wife and I became respite care foster parents, just drop of a hat. It was my brother and sister-in-law had just adopted earlier that year, and we thought, well, let's see what the fostering route has to lead, and we didn't think it would be that fast, but it's quick. And we were told, hey, there's these two children that have nowhere to go for Christmas. And they're going to sit in their caseworker's office over the Christmas break.
And you had a chance to give these two children Christmas. How old were they?
Yeah, so they were 2 and 3 years old.
Oh, my word. Yeah. So you fell in love with them, huh?
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, and so we only had them for a month, but we were able to give them what we hoped was the best Christmas that they had.
What about that? What about not only you falling in love with them, but they falling in love with you?
Yeah.
And, you know, because I heard a story years ago about an older couple in town that were hanging out with this child for maybe 7 years, and just one weekend said, well, we've decided we're moving away. We're going to retire wherever, another state, and so we're going to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And that child was like, oh, my God, just pulling the rug out from under the child into a pit.
Yeah.
What about that? How do you?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of mourning. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And
I guess it's better to have loved and lost than not to have loved at all.
Yeah. And really in foster care. And so four kids, we are in foster care agency. And so sometimes that leads to adoption, but the main goal is foster care. And in foster care, they try for reunification with their biological parents. But if that doesn't work, then they ask their caretakers, their foster parents, if they would adopt.
Can I be straight about something, too? As a white male in today's society, okay, somebody accuses you of going into a dressing room 35 years ago, and they convict you, a former president of the United States, whether he did or didn't, I don't know. But there's no evidence. And so it's, what if a child should say, you know, you tempted something you didn't do, or you admonish them, they get mad at you, I'll show you. There was a girl, African-American girl, in South Florida a few years ago, and she said this teacher had attempted to do something, this man, African-American teacher, and he was arrested. He's in jail 3 years. When she accuses another man of doing something, she's in the court, and she breaks down crying, said this man didn't do anything, and either did the man in jail.
Yeah.
Ruined his life. So what, I mean, you know, because I'd like to adopt. I mean, even with Trevor, Pastor Trevor's in here, and they have two adopted children who have taken to me. And the even the little one, the new little one, she's come up to me. I don't know if I met the little boy yet or not. Is that a baby?
No, another little girl. Only one. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, but even I'm, you know, taking my time, getting to know them, because you know what I'm saying? It's and like with another young man who has, what's that thing that he has, the teenager?
Oh, the Asperger's?
Yeah. And even him, I'd like to get close to him, want to help him, but taking my time because, you know, we want to slowly get to know. So are there rules and regulations, and how do you handle this without feeling like you're walking on broken glass?
I mean, I'll speak a little bit to that, and that is, one, four kids, they provide probably some of the best training that you could receive as a foster parent about, you know, what to do, things to protect yourself against, things to be aware of. So I'm not going in blind to a situation. There's a lot of things that, boy, I never really thought about that before. Even as a high school teacher, there's a lot of, you know, things you have to, you know, consider. But because of the training through 4Kids, they really prepare both husbands and wives or individuals that want to be a foster parent how to do it well, avoid those kind of situations, really build a trust relationship, and ultimately encourage that child when, you know, again, as Corey said, you know, this is about restoring families. Mm-hmm. God is in the business of restoring families. And so
That restoration means you fall in love, but then they're given back to that family.
You know, another lady, a part of the program, y'all know her, Kenya. She came in our house. This was like 2.5-3 years ago. And my wife, you know, we've dealt with infertility for 10 years. We've been praying about how to raise a family. And, you know, you talk to a family that's been struggling with having our own kids. I mean, how about taking in a child and then handing them back? That's a huge heartbreak.
Yeah.
But what convinced us was when Kenya said, well, you know, what if this is the only time this child would ever feel God's love?
Yeah.
Isn't it worth it? And that's where we said yes. And so, you know, that might be just what you do. You know, you love on a child and you care for them and they come back to their families and you walk through heartbreak yourself, but there's hope on the other side of it. You know, the equation it's not left at heartbreak. There's always hope. And hopefully the gospel restores the whole family too.
Yeah. There's a saying in the community that, because we get this a lot, right? We get people who are interested in fostering, but they say, you know, I don't think my heart could take it, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
or
yeah.
I just would love them too much. It would be too hard. And what how we try to phrase it is, well, we let our hearts break so that theirs can heal.
Mm-hmm.
Because regardless of whether or not you take the child in, there's still a child that needs a home. And we need to get over ourselves and the heartbreak that we're afraid of so that we can provide a healing place for these kids to go.
You know, you take a kid from the city. I, when I was a kid, I went to Camp Wawa Segoya. Woo! Okay. So you take a kid, though, out of the city, and you put him up to camp. This was in New Canaan, Connecticut. And you put that child into a camp. You send that child back to the city. Never gets to go again. You can take the child out of the camp, but the camp is going to stay in the child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a goal, a setting, you know. Wow, this other world exists. If I work, if I go to school, whatever my plan and my desire, I want to get back there. They like the country, for instance. I mean, so...
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer. And this is a new day.
We'd like to thank Pleens Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie for sponsoring It's a New Day. We'd also like to thank Center for Advanced Eye Care, Dr. Mallon, Center for Advanced Eye Care with offices in Fort Pierce and in Vero Beach. Thank you for supporting us.